Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is Mary Bolan, a writer deeply familiar with the foodways of colonial America. She not only writes about that history, she lives it and demonstrates it. Often you'll find her over an open fire, at a Revolutionary War site, or at a living history museum. Mary Bolan of Wilkes County, North Carolina, is the author of the book Mary Bolan's Heritage Cooking, inspired by Rebecca Boone. The book was published by Mercer University Press of Macon, Georgia in 2020. Mary Bolan, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Well, thank you, Fred. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Since we are a few weeks away from Christmas, let's talk about your preparations for the holiday and some of the dishes from colonial America that you regularly prepare this time of year.
Well, that's an interesting question. It just so happens that about a week ago, I prepared plum cake down at the Wilkes Heritage Museum for their open house, and that is a British recipe, and we made it in the form of a cake instead of a boiled or a steamed pudding because it was going to be easier for me to bake for the short span that we had for that particular program for that day. But one of the items that I use, or one of the recipes that I use for Christmas time, is the plum pudding, either a boiled pudding or, as I said this time, the plum cake. Another item is Shrewsbury cakes, which is a little cookie, and it got its name from Shrewsbury, England. And it's very much like a little tea cake or a butter cookie. But back in the colonial times, they did not call cookies cookies. They called them cakes or little cakes. And so those are two of the items that I have used on a regular basis. One of the things about Christmas and the colonial period for me is cooking where depends on your location. For example, when I do my cooking, it's mostly the back country, as opposed to Williamsburg or Boston or Charleston. So you have to think about what foods were available to people in the back country. And yes, you could get spices. You could get some dried fruit, possibly, or sugar or molasses, but those items were expensive and they had to be imported from great distances. So the availability was questionable. But in the Christmas holiday era, plum pudding was very common and a tradition for many, many, many years. And it when you think of plum pudding, you think about plums, the fruit plums, but that term plum meant any kind of fruit or dried fruit, raisins, currants, maybe even a citron or candied or sugared lemon peel or orange peel. Because of the expense of some of these ingredients and because of the distance that some of it had to be imported, because another thing is the spices. The spices were imported from the Caribbean or from Indonesia, And when you think about, even today, spices are expensive. So sugar, molasses, any spices, and even some of the dried fruit was imported. And so that's what made some of it so expensive. A lot of the cooking that I do is what I would associate with backcountry or on the frontier of the Carolinas and Tennessee or South Carolina and Georgia. And many of the people who lived in the backcountry were early settlers. Some of them were looking for cheap, fertile land or wanting to make a new start. And they may not have had the ability to purchase some of the specialty items that would go into a plum cake. For example, the different spices, nutmeg, cinnamon, mace, cloves, or the molasses that would be needed for the recipe, and some of the dried fruit. So I think about the different kinds of people that were on the frontier. Some of them had the ability that they had wealth, or they were well-to-do, or they had good connections to the East Coast, so they could get some of these items. But sometimes I think it was iffy whether they were able to get them or not. However, that being said, the English plum pudding was a tradition. Christmas was a time, of course, it was very different then in the colonial time than it is today. We are so commercialized, and we've got so many decorations and that sort of thing. And Christmas was not celebrated to the extent that we do it today. It was a much simpler time.
Let's go back to the plum cake for a minute. Is that a cake that you typically bake in an open hearth?
Yes, I did. This particular receipt that I had came from an 1830 recipe, or we call them receipts in the 18th century. And it's in the form of a cake, and I made it in a pottery redware dish inside the Dutch oven. It had brown sugar, butter, molasses, raisins, currants, cloves, cinnamon, nutmeg, flour, and sherry and brandy. And it was it turned out very well. This particular recipe that I have had been adapted to a modern-day cook, so that made it easier for me to share with visitors who came to the museum, because they can take this recipe that I handed out and the directions and go home and make it in their own oven. And that, you know, a lot of the colonial recipes are written in pounds or ounces or teacup, and not exact measurements, and you have to translate that into what a modern-day cook would use. But I used this plum cake recipe so that I could share it with visitors and they could take it home and make it in their own oven.
Tell me about the origin of your passion for cooking outdoors and cooking in the open hearth and honoring those colonial and early American food traditions that you're known for.
Oh, thank you for asking that. It really is an interesting journey. I have always liked history, particularly American history, and my mother was a very good cook, and I watched her in the kitchen, and Mother very seldom used a recipe. Well, she used a recipe if it was a cake or a pie, but just beans, corn, cornbread, meatloaf or whatever. It was just a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But anyway, I was very interested in colonial America and my ancestry, and often wondered what it was like for my great-great-grandmothers, what was life like for them. And I was doing an internship at Agnes Scott College in Decatur, Georgia, and did a internship at the Atlanta Historical Society, which is now, I think, the Atlanta History Center. And I was also a tour guide at the Tully Smith House, and they had an outdoor kitchen, and they cooked on a regular basis on the open fire, and I ended up taking a class there, and I was hooked. There was something about cooking on the fireplace and producing something that with your own hands and seeing how it would come out, not knowing what the temperature was or how long to cook something. I often have people ask me, how long does it take to cook a cake or to cook a pie or to cook biscuits? I can't tell you that. It's not an exact science, because we don't have a clock and we don't have a temperature gauge that is in the kitchen. So it's based, a good cook will, can tell if something's done sometimes by the smell of the food or by checking it, but it's not exact, as we have today. But at any rate, I also helped build a log cabin at Latta Plantation in Huntersville. And about the same time, in the early 80s, I took a log cabin course and built a one-room cabin at Latta Plantation, and eventually ended up cooking in the cabin that I helped build. And it was just, it was a very fulfilling experience for me, and it gave me a link to my ancestry, to my grandmothers, my great-grandmothers, to know what their life was like many, many years ago. And it was a great connection for me, and I've been doing it ever since.
Before we close, tell me about Rebecca Boone's North Carolina connections and how you became fascinated with her life.
Rebecca Boone, to me, is a fascinating woman, and we don't know a lot about her because she is in the shadow of her husband, her well-known husband, Daniel Boone. But I live in the community where Daniel and Rebecca lived along the Yadkin River here in Wilkes County, North Carolina. And there is a historic site here called Whippoorwill Village, and there is a replica Boone cabin there that was built based on the measurements that someone took from some foundation stones many years ago. And the lady who owned the village was Edith Marie Carter, and she asked me to come and cook in the cabin. And so as I can remember standing in front of the fireplace, knowing that Rebecca Boone was actually living less than a mile from where I was cooking in that replica cabin. And I would think about her, and I would think about how did she cook for so many children. She had a lot of children, and there were other adults that would probably be connected to the family or working there. And I would wonder, how did she cook for so many people? What did she cook? How did she do it? How did she learn how to do it? What ingredients did she have, or what did she not have? And it inspired me to think about her life. Rebecca was, I think she's a very smart woman. I think she was very strong, and she knew a lot about living on the frontier because that was the life that she had experienced almost all of her life. And just thinking about her life, we think about her, but she's just one of many women that were on the frontier. And so when I think about Rebecca, it's not just Rebecca, it's all the other women that were here also, living a life, depending very much on yourself. You had to be self-sufficient, search for food, gather food, gather wild food, be able to, cook, game, bear, deer, or fish from the creek. And I think it's just a fascinating story. And it's a fascinating story about Rebecca and Daniel. And they were here in North Carolina for over 20 years.
Mary Bolin, I could talk to you all day long, but we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us for Vital Voices.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate it very much, and I wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you, and Happy Thanksgiving. Mary Bolin is the author of Mary Bolin's Heritage Cooking, inspired by Rebecca Boone, a book published in 2020 by Mercer University Press in Macon, Georgia. Mary has written about early American and regional history for well over 30 years. She is considered an expert on open hearth and campfire cooking. In North Carolina and in other states as well, she demonstrates authentic colonial campfire and hearth cooking at Revolutionary War reenactment sites and at living history museums. Vital Voices is produced in the studios of WETS-FM on the campus of East Tennessee State University in Johnson City. Join us every Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2 for Vital Voices.